Good morning, everyone. It's great to see everyone out this morning. I appreciate the time you've given me to come and present a lesson that I presented, this is 2 weeks now at this point, about David and Goliath. We're going to spend most of our time today in 1 Samuel chapter 17. If you want to take your Bibles and open it there, we'll be reading there. There won't be any verses on the screen. It's a great story. It's a well-known story. One of the things that I do love to do, though, is talk about the story and put it in context. So we're going to do that today. We're going to talk about the characters. We're going to set the scene, and then we're going to talk about some lessons that we learned from this story, because there's more to this story than just David throwing a rock or slinging a rock at Goliath. So first, let's talk about the main characters. We know David, we know his story, right? But at this point in time, David's a young shepherd, right? And he's also the armor bearer. We read in the chapter previous in 16 that he is going to be chosen by, that he is chosen by God. He's anointed by Samuel, and he's filled with the Spirit of the Lord. That's where he is right now, this young man who has been determined to be the next king. We also have our main protagonist of the story, right? We have Goliath. He's the Philistine champion. He stands over 9 foot tall. He has armor that's hundreds and hundreds of pounds. And he's this overwhelming force that the Israelites are facing. We also have King Saul. King Saul is not a small man either. We read in 1 Samuel 9, verse 2, that he is head and shoulders above all of Israel. But at this point, you know, he's no longer filled with the Spirit of the Lord. He's upset, he's angry, that's why David ends up coming to go and play the harp for him. But he's also just shown as the opposite of David, where he's hesitant and fearful, where David is courageous and brave. The last person that's in this story that we don't talk about very often is Eliab, who is David's older brother. He's a soldier in the army. He was there, he witnessed when Samuel anointed David, that also meant that he was one of the few that were passed over by Samuel to be anointed. And we see that he's going to have some feelings about David when we run into him, but he's also afraid like Saul. So now that we got the main characters, you know, the people of our story, the main people who we're going to talk about this morning, let's set the scene. The one thing I love about the Old Testament is not only is it a historical account of the things that happened in Israel, but it does a wonderful job telling the story much better than I could paraphrase it. So if we begin in verse 1 and read verses 1 through 11. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Socah, which belongs to Judah, and encamped between Socah and Azekah in Ephraim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley in between them. And there came out of the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span, and he had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, and he had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's height weighed 600 shekels of iron, and his shield bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then I will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So we open up to the scene of two armies on opposing hills and a valley between them. This is interesting because this is a very common ancient warfare military tactic where two sides would go and stand on opposing hills. They would have great visibility, but also they would go and try to wait each other out. They would go and, almost similar to laying siege to a town, they would go and wait until one of the one of the army's resources were depleted before making an attack. There's a couple reasons for this. One, because if they're going to be on a hill, you're going to be able to see them visibly, right? If another army makes a move, you're going to be able to react to it. But also, being on the high ground of the hill is very important. And we've heard that, you know, by many. So they have this high ground, so it's much easier to defend the high ground than it is to run up the hill. So now we're going to have these two armies sitting there waiting for one of them to make a move, and Goliath comes out, walks out, and issues this challenge that says, the armies don't have to fight, but one person can fight me. And Goliath does this for 40 days. We read that in verse 16 that we haven't read yet, but we're going to be reading it here shortly. So everyone is terrified. What I find interesting here is that while they're on the mountains, and this is a common military tactic that was, you know, historically had many accounts, this concept of one-on-one fighting during this time period and really up until the Middle Ages wasn't a common practice. Really, the only depictions of this we find are in things like the Odyssey and other myths and legends of the Roman, like the Roman accounts of mythology where two people will square off. We don't really have that as a common practice until into the Middle Ages, where they would start doing that because they realized that they would just deplete each other's resources and then there wouldn't be much to conquer after all the men were conquered. Well, we find Israel here standing in terror. And this is where David enters the scene. So let's pick up in verse 12. Now David was the son of an Ephraimite of Bethlehem in Judah named Jesse, who had 8 sons in the days of Saul the man, who was already old and advanced in years. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle. The names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days the Philistines came forward and took his stand, morning and evening. And Jesse said to David his son, take for your brothers an ephah of this parchment of grain, and these 10 loaves, and carry them quickly to the camp to your brothers. Also take these 10 cheeses to the commander of their 1,000. See if your brothers are well, and bring some token from them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the Valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Some interesting things that we note here is that, much like we were talking about them being on the mountains, the Israelites don't have a professional army. We see this in the book of Judges a lot, where a judge will go and gather up men from a tribe to go fight a battle. The same thing is happening here in the time with Saul. And really, full armies don't, you know, professional armies don't really come about until the Assyrian and Babylonian empires, which I think is interesting when we think about the prophecies in Daniel and how those countries are going to amass so much territory. So at this point, we have the Israelites who would be needing food and supplies while they're in this battle. And what's going to happen is that the families of those soldiers are going to be the ones responsible for delivering the food that the soldiers would receive. So we see that David, you know, not only is he Saul's armor bearer, but at this point, Jesse is sending him to go check on his brothers and to drop off some food. So let's pick up in verse 20. David arose early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper, took provisions, and went, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry, and Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the bag and ran to the ranks. And when he greeted his brothers, as he talked with them, behold, the champion of the Philistines of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw them, fled from him, and they were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who comes up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David said to the men who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in the same way, so shall it be done to the man who kills him. As David approaches the camp and is talking to his brothers, he witnesses Goliath's taunts. While everyone else in the camp was afraid, David was upset. Why was David upset? Well, I like the word that is used here in what I read, this idea of reproach. Reproach to being shame or disgrace. One of the great things about David is you can see in the Psalms how he writes and how he feels about things, how he thinks about things. He writes it all down for us. So if we quickly turn to Psalm 69 and verse 9. He uses, this word is used again here. For zeal for your house has consumed me, and the reproaches of those who reproach you have fallen on me. This is this man. While this psalm is written later, this is still the same man who's talking about this. David is consumed with zeal for God. Right? He's filled with the Spirit. And when someone reproaches God, he takes it personally. Then we have to think, well, how is this insulting God? David knows that the reason why Israel is a special nation is because of God. David understands that the victory is coming from God if there is a victory to be had. And as long as Israel's faithful, there's no need to worry. There's no reason to be afraid of Goliath. Also, during this time period, when armies would go to battle and countries would go to battle, the idea was that the men would be conquered, but also it was to show which God was stronger. That was one of the brags and one of the benefits of winning. And David didn't want anyone to even consider the idea that their false God was stronger than the living God. So he's immediately upset when he hears these things. When he goes and we talk about his idea of being courageous and going and facing Goliath, his courage is initiated way before that. It is initiated when he decides that something needs to be done about this man who's reproaching God. And he's faced with challenges from the moment he speaks up. If we pick back up again in verse 28, "Now Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. He said, 'Why have you come down? And why have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, and for you have come down to the battle to see the battle.' And David said, 'What have I done now? Was it not but a word?' He turned away from him toward another and spoke in the same way. And the people answered him as again before. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go out and fight this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war since his youth.' But David said to Saul, 'Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck them and delivered him out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them. For he has defied the armies of the living God.' David said, 'The Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion, and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'Go, and the Lord be with you.'" David's first challenge wasn't Goliath. It was his own brother. Right? He was convicted to do what was right. He was ready to show courage. He was ready to say, "What's going wrong here? Something is happening here." And he sees it from the moment he hears it. He questions this thing, and Eliab comes to challenge him. Now, with hindsight, we're able to understand that Eliab isn't correct here. But I just love that in the scripture, we're laid out that all of Eliab's accusations really aren't true. Right? He says, "You've come down to see the battle." Well, we know that his dad sent him there, right? He says, "Well, you must have left those sheep." Well, we know the Bible tells us, no, he didn't leave the sheep, right? We understand that David is coming because he's been sent and he's taken care of all his other business while he's there. And he's been going back and forth. One of the things we read is, right, he's been the armor bearer. So he's gone back and forth to this battle to take care of the sheep. So it's not his first time coming here. But the thing is, Eliab is more focused on his anger with his brother. And it blinds him and just makes him assume what his brother is doing. One of the things I find interesting is that we always say sometimes it's hard to do the right thing. And then what really comes to be crazy is we decide to do the right thing, and we think the hard part's over. But what sometimes we find is we'll be surrounded by people who we think are supposed to be doing the right thing as well. And instead of encouraging us, they're going to be the ones who are trying to pull us down, to have us stop us from doing the right thing, right? We see that, you know, they may try to hurt us. Eliab goes, I know your arrogance and the wickedness of your heart. That doesn't sound like someone trying to correct, but rather just someone trying to find fault and discredit. We may have times where no one else will stand around us, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but then we may also have times with David where we've stood up to do the right thing, and it's not just that someone won't stand up with us, they'll be trying to pull us down. And the courage that I think we see here is not just the idea that you're going to have the courage to step out and be different from you and overcome the people that want to drag you out. David also shows his godly heart. He doesn't lash out. He responds with humility, sincerity, and conviction. And I think that's probably the most courageous part of this challenge. It would be the thing that I would struggle with the most out of all of these things, right? Your own brother comes after you. Then he goes, he answers this way, and he keeps asking the people, something should be done about this. And the word gets to the king, right? And David, again, is going to show his courage because he's not only going to be talking to his brother's way, but now he's getting a summons from the king. And we see, you know, we know that just approaching the king and getting a summons from the king is life or death, even in a battle situation, right? Even if he is the armor bearer, if the king is summoning you, he was not afraid. And what I love about this is not only is he not afraid to approach the king, he's showing the courage to go and basically say, all right, well, it's gotten to the king that I've been saying this. Now it's time for me to do what I've been asking everyone else to do. And it reminds me of the lessons that we read in James chapter 2. If you want to turn there quickly, James chapter 2 and in verse 14, it reads, what good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works, can that faith save him? And then hopping down to verse 18, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from works and I will show you my faith by my works. David has been proclaiming this idea of, I believe God will provide the victory. Why are we letting this man speak ill against God? God will be the one who provides the victory. And here, David, when finally challenged by Saul, or asked, questioned by Saul to come forward before him, he says, all right, well, I'm going to be the man who does it. I'm going to be the man. And the last part is when he's talking to Saul, David trusts in God's faithfulness, not his own strength. When we read about how he recounts the stories of how he was saved by the lion and the bear, he does not give the credit to himself and his craftiness or his, you know, how he was able to trick these animals. He talks about the fact that God is the one who delivered me from them, and he's going to deliver me from Goliath as well. And just for time here, I think about Psalm 20, and we don't really have time to read the whole thing, but here this is the same guy standing before Saul that is the same one writing Psalm 20, and he's talking about how he trusts in the Lord. And in verse 7, instead of reading the whole Psalm, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. That's who he's putting his trust in. So now we've talked about the lead up of everything that's been going on. Now let's talk about, you know, what most people are, you know, well more prepared about, and that's the battle. But the most important part of a battle is the preparation. So let's talk about David's preparation. We're going to pick up again in verse 38. Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over his armor. And he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. Then David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. So David put them off, and he took his staff in his hand. He chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. David goes and tells Saul, I'm ready to go fight Goliath. And Saul, you know, kind of like what we see sometimes in movies, you know, hits a button and all types of weapons, all types of armor are going to be made to David here, right? He's going to have whatever access to whatever equipment he needs. There's just one problem. David hasn't tested that equipment yet. I think of multiple analogies for this. I'll use the same one I used a couple weeks ago. We have a lot of kitchen equipment in our apartment, mostly Isaac's, right? And if you ask Isaac and I to make the same meal with the same equipment, one of us is going to do better, right? That's the simplest way I can put that. If we're not prepared with the equipment, we're not going to be ready to go and use it. And that's what David is recognizing here. I don't know this equipment. I don't know how it works. I can't just go into battle with this stuff I don't understand. Then we have to ask ourselves, what is our equipment? Right? We're going to have battles, right? We go and we look in Ephesians chapter 6, we talk about these battles that we have. And to surmise, we do have equipment. There's equipment listed out in Ephesians chapter 6 with the whole armor of God, the belt of truth, the breastplate of righteousness, the shoes of the gospel of peace, the shield of faith, helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit. I also like Romans 13:12 that talks about putting on the armor of light. David took the time to think about his equipment when he prepared. We need to ask ourselves, are we training with our equipment for when it's time to go into battle? Not a physical battle, but a spiritual battle. Are we well equipped? Are we well versed in our equipment and what we have so that we are able to do the job properly, to go into the battle properly? Well, what does Goliath think of this teenage boy who's showing up as the champion on the battlefield with just a sling? We pick up again in verse 41. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David and his shield bearer in the front of him. And when the Philistine looked and he saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? The Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give you give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. Goliath was insulted. He was ready to destroy David. And if we think about it from Goliath's side, right, he's been challenging these Israelites for 40 days, and all of a sudden a kid walks out to challenge him. You know, we can kind of mock it, but if we think about it and we said, oh, well, we're challenging someone to a fight, right, and all of a sudden a kid walks out, wouldn't we take that almost as an insult? But here David never wavered. In verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, and that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with a sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut his head. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. David's victory, when he was talking to Goliath, David might have get credit for the victory of the battle, but David was giving the credit to God, the same person he's been talking about. When he was prepared with the equipment, he listened to battle. You know, we talked about the fact that he was coming in with a sling. He came in with the living God. I think it's also interesting, right, because he's calling his shot. He's telling him how he's going to kill him, but not with a sword in hand, right? That's how confident David is in the victory that God is going to give him. He's telling him, I'm going to take your own weapon and kill you with it. Trusting in God so much that the battle was, you know, the battle that we talk about, this battle that, you know, is kind of the one of the most known stories, isn't really the story itself. It's the idea that David trusted in God. And that's why we have all this lead up and all this story about how this battle is going to go, and with an instant, it's over. To wrap up this story, I'd like to talk to you real quickly about just a couple other thoughts that we can learn from this story. We've talked about some application of what David's been doing. There's a couple other lessons that we can pull from the story of David and Goliath. The one is, it's never too early to be courageous. I have here written down in my notes 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. And like you know, this was, you know, presented, you know, to mostly 18-year-olds, and this idea of the young kids being encouraged to stand up and do what's right. But it's also for us too. When we think about, you know, we go into work and we see something, and we see something we probably don't like, if we just sit by and let it happen, what we realize, it's probably going to get worse. It's never too early to be courageous to do the right thing, because we need to do it as quickly as we can. As soon as we see something's wrong, we need to determine in our hearts, we need to make this right. We need to do what's right. We also need to be led by faith and not by fear. Fear is what dictated the actions of the Israelite army. It can also dictate our lives as well. We can be terrified of whether it's coming up in front of people, or, you know, learning something new, or even just standing out in the crowd like we talked about before. We can't let fear determine how to live our lives. And here I have 2 Timothy 1 verse 7. I encourage you to read that later today just for the sake of time. And the last point is, our courageous actions should be to honor God. We often see this story depicted a lot of times in the secular world, talking about a small team beating a big team, things to that nature. But when we talk about the story of David and Goliath, we need to understand the context. That's why I wanted to spend some time with you this morning talking about the context here, talking about what was in David's heart. He was courageous, yes, but his courageous actions were because he wanted to honor God properly. We can't be courageous, and we can't think about, you know, oh, I'm going to be courageous like David for our own glory. Because the entire time David was talking, he was never talking about, you know, he may say, I'm going to do this, but it's going to be through God. And we need to understand that, that when we are courageous, when we are doing these things, right, I think we talked about it in our overcoming sin class. We talked about pride and how, you know, is pride a sin? Yes, but there's also, you know, like being full of God and being proud and being able to boldly proclaim that, right? There's this difference, and this is where we need to look at it at. David was courageous and he was bold in God. And that's what we need to be today as well. I appreciate so much the time that you've given me this morning. And now at this time, we have an opportunity to go and make aware of the needs of the church. Maybe you're ready to step and start walking the path, start following Christ. Or maybe you have fallen away. Maybe you've been discouraged. Maybe you have, you know, allowed things to slide a little bit too long. And you need help getting back on the right path. If there is any need that you have that we can help you with this morning, please let it be known as we stand and sing.